Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey guys, before we get into this episode of Talking Metal with photographer Mark Weiss, the one and only, wow, man, this guy has shot everyone from Kiss to Van Halen to Guns N' Roses. His new book is amazing. We're going to talk to him all about it, so stay tuned for that. But before we do that, let's thank the patrons, the people who make this show happen. You are the executive producers of Talking Metal, the people who financially support what I do with this podcast, which is now over 15 years old. We started it back in August 2005. Here we are, September 2018, and here are the people who support what I do with it. Metal Dan. Hey, Dan, I just mailed you out the Talking Metal face mask, so be on the lookout for that. John Buavari, Steve Hoker, Mike Jones, Jay Vaninsky, Michael Street, Fred Rutz, David S. Gray, John Bennett, Anthony Mackey, Jean-Francois Blas, Ron Keel, Stephen Saylor, Jason Seth, Joe Ryan, Matt Carroll, Drake, Sam Soupy, Jerry from Long Island, Dan Gurwan, Richard Langridge, Brad Dahl from Utah, Leo from Alaska, Kenny McCrimmon, Kenny McCrimmon, I'm sorry about that, Tommy Anderson, Steve Rodriguez, Johan Enderstrom, Jeremy Weltman, and Andrew Miller. Thanks, dudes. Here we go. Here's the episode.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
Such a disgrace, I couldn't look her straight in the face.
off of the Blizzard of Oz album by Ozzy Osbourne, an album which is almost 40 years old. Isn't that wild? 40 years old. And the one guy who really took so many great pictures of Ozzy back in that era, especially Mark Weiss, he's on the podcast with us. Let me just look at Blizzard of Oz before we get into that interview. Blizzard of Oz, it's got to be just about 40, right? I'm going to Wikipedia. Yeah, man. Wow. September 20th, 1980. So 40 years old. Ozzy Osbourne's Blizzard of Oz. Craziness. Craziness. Wow. Time is flying by. 40 years since Randy and Ozzy released that beast of a record on us. Of course, Lee on the drums, Bob Daisley on the bass. Supposedly also helping out with lyrics. Yeah, man, great stuff. So let's do this. Let's get into Mark Weiss here on the podcast. This was a conversation that John and I had with Mark on the Talking Metal live stream recently, and he will be doing his thing at the Monmouth Museum, I believe it is, in New Jersey this Friday. And then the exhibit will stay at the museum, so you can really go check it out at any time for, I believe, at least the next month or so. But I need to confirm that. We'll get it up in the show notes. But anyways, without further ado, here's our interview. When I say our, John Astronomy Ostrowski and myself, here's our interview with the ultimate rock and roll photographer, Mark Weiss.
We have an amazing show tonight, Mark. We have... let's do a toast to Mark Weiss, legendary photographer. Dang. Bang. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking, it's this Brooklyn brewery, 6 Point Brewery, resin. And it is 9%, 9.5. Wait, is that right? Yeah, 9.1% alcohol and brewed in Brooklyn, New York.
Wow.
I'm a fan of those Brooklyn breweries. The Brooklyn beer brewery itself is great, and I like the 5 points too, or 6 points. I'm sorry.
Awesome.
Cool.
Hey, and we've got Mark Weiss. He is on.
Mark, how are you?
All you got to do is click a button, and you're on. It's unbelievable.
It's great. Now we were just setting up the show, Mark, and we want to tell everybody that we are first with legendary photographer Mark Weiss. You've got two things going on. You've got a great book called The Decade That Rocked, which Mark is going to hold up here. He's got it for either, I think it was for Father's Day.
Yeah, my wife surprised me with this for Father's Day, Mark, and it was my favorite gift of the day for sure. Great stuff. I want to talk to you all about this because I'm truly enjoying it. So many, not only great photos, Mark, but I love the little write-ups, the stories, you know, that you've included with the photos, the kind of backstory, I guess I would. There's a lot of great stuff there. I don't want to spoil them all, but there's a few I'd like to ask you about. So we'll get to that in a bit.
Spoil away. It's fine. You know, share the word. You know, you got to, you know, it's something reading it, but and talking about it and showing it on you know, on your web. But holding it and looking at it, you know, it's you know, just it means a lot to me, you know, that I put this together and everyone's there to check it out and enjoy it. And I look at it every day and it's like, geez, I did that. And it's
it's amazing stuff. And this, of course, is the decade that rocked, and that would be the 1980s. So it's your work from that specific decade. But before we dive into the book, John, why don't you set up what Mark has coming up and we can talk to him about what's going on there.
Absolutely. The opening is September 12th. And I think the official opening to the public is September 14th at the Monmouth Museum. It's the Decade That Rocked exhibit, And it's showcasing stuff from your home. We did an exclusive today on my Facebook page of the Slippery When Wet shirt, which is being seen for the first time ever. And Mark, I mean, you even have the garbage bag, I think it was, for the Slippery When Wet cover. And I love the story. I watched the piece. I don't know if it was VH1 who did that on that album cover, and John Bon Jovi calling you. We're going to get into that. But Mark, I got to tell you something first, and you're not going to believe this, but I have thought of you, and I'm going to tell you why, and you're going to remember, every single day for probably the last 15 years. And I'm not kidding, because you gave me two prints of Ozzy. One was of Ozzy, a headshot from the 80s, and one was Ozzy and Amy Osborne when she was a baby, and the baby has like a devil costume on, and I've had that in my entranceway in three different apartments. So as soon as I walked into three different apartments, including the newest one, I've got both of your pictures right there.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. I like that.
And I got to thank you. You gave me two actual prints that you had in a portfolio because you did a gallery opening at 1515 Broadway, the MTV studios and office. And it was amazing. And after that exhibit, you gave me those prints. VH1 framed them, and they've been in every single entranceway to my apartment for the last 15 years.
That's cool, man. I like hearing stories like that.
Yeah.
So Mark, you're gonna be having an exhibit, right? There's gonna be an exhibit coming. And can you tell us a little bit about when and where this is happening?
Yeah, well, it's at Monmouth Museum. It's right by Red Bank, exit 109. It's the Brookdale College. It's their campus. It's like on there. So you just follow the signs to Brookdale Community College, and it's called Monmouth Museum. You can go online and check it out. Check out, get directions. But it's this huge space. It's like hidden away. Like, I'm really looking forward to sharing this space with people. And they just kind of let me do whatever I want with it. So I had all the space, and for the last like month, I just turned it into my house, pretty much. I just pulled stuff off my walls and went into the garage, found some tour books, got my laminates, put them in some cases. And then I started finding all these things I didn't even know I had. And it's all going to be there. And I took my gold records off my walls here and I put them there. Not all of them, but a handful. So each year I have my gold record for each year from 1980 to 1990. And
wow.
All sorts of little things. And I'm not done decorating it yet. You know, I keep going back there every day until the opening on the 12th.
Mark, wow. You sent me a video sample of it, and it was unbelievable. The place looks great to begin with. It's huge, and you've got it filled with just the most amazing rock and roll memorabilia from our favorite decade, and we will absolutely be visiting the exhibit, hopefully on opening day. That's my birthday, September 12th.
Well, we're going to have a birthday party for you there.
I would love it. It's on. It's a definite.
So, Mark, you said you discovered some stuff you didn't even know you had. Can you give us an example of one of those items?
Yeah, well, the Slippery shirt, I didn't know I had it until I started digging around, and I just kept digging and digging, and there it was. I couldn't believe it. So I pulled that one out. And then, I did want to put in my, I have the Come Out and Play street in my garage, but it's about 2 tons. So I had to leave that there. I really wanted to. And I have the manhole cover that's actually, it went to the Heavy Metal Grammy Museum a few years ago, and it ended up at the Hard Rock, and it's still there, and I have to get that. So that would have been cool. So that's not going to be there. But what do I have in there? Well, there's that. There's my camera that I first started mowing lawns, and I got it when I was 12. So that's going to be there on my mannequin. I don't know. Did you see that little video clip of the mannequin?
I don't know if I saw the mannequin. I got to watch it again because there's so many great clips, but I watched the one where there was a model standing there in front of a blue seamless background.
That was actually me. It's a dummy.
Okay. So I did see the mannequin because I saw the headband. I go, is that a girl or is that Mark?
Yeah. So I recreated my photo studio. So I have my background, and I made a mannequin. I got my first head, my bandana I ever had. It's on there. My camera and my purple pants that I used to wear in high school when I used to go to concerts.
So I did see the mannequin.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah, that was me. you'll see me there, and you'll see Angela in the on her mannequin with the Slippery shirt on.
Yep. Mark, awesome. The stuff looked great. I can't wait to see what it looked amazing as is right now, but I can't wait to see what it looks like on September 12th when you've got it all completely done up. And that's going to be an amazing birthday party for me, coming down to hang out with you and seeing that exhibit.
Sounds
cool.
Great.
And again, that is at the Mammoth Museum in New Jersey. So everyone needs to check that out. Now, Mark, you mentioned the Slippery When Wet t-shirt. For viewers and listeners who might not know, can you talk a little bit about that album cover. So you take the album cover picture and then it ends up changing, right? Can you tell the story behind that?
Yeah, well, the album was first going to be called Wanted Dead or Alive, and I shot them in these cowboy motifs, you know, like they all dressed up like, you know, Billy the Kid, they all grew beards, and they all came in my studio, and I shot them one by one over the course of 2 weeks, and then I put together this collage of all five of them, and it was pretty much done. And then a few months later, we got a call, and they were in Vancouver finishing up the record, and they said, you know, come on up, and we want to do another shot, like in a warehouse where they're not without beards. And we had the poster in the background. So that was another theme. And then they decided to go with Slippery When Wet, just a change of heart. And then they told me what the concept was with the girls, because we used to go to the strip club up there, the number 5 club. And they had this plexiglass booth where they used to wet down the girls. And we used to, you know, after, you know, they would be recording and I'd be photographing, go over there and, you know, check it out like any, you know, young rock band would do. And then, you know, the signs kept coming up, and I believe Doc McGee kind of put two and two together and just said, Slippery When Wet, you know. And then they said, all right, when we get back to Jersey, we want you to do a shoot with the band down the beach with all the cars, and we'll do like a car wash scene, and we'll get these t-shirts that say Slippery When Wet. And so we did. We went down there to Belmar, me and my friend Danny Sanchez helped me out, and we got this shoot together. It was kind of easy to go, but, you know, all the guys brought their girlfriends, but none of the girlfriends had really big, you know, breasts. So Tico and my friend Danny said, we'll go find someone. So they went across the street over in, over down to the beach, and they came back with this girl named Angela, you know, wow. Italian, beautiful girl.
They just found literally on the beach.
Yeah.
Within 5 minutes, you know, you want to be on an album cover. Cause at the time that was the photo. We didn't know. We thought it might be the album cover. It could be the back cover, but, you know, we were just going for the idea. Just kind of really spontaneous, and that was it. And we put Angela like right in the front and center. It ended up on the inner sleeve, I believe, and also, you know, it made its way out there. And actually, it ended up doing the cover shoot, I believe, like a week later. John said, you know, we want you to just shoot Angela, you know, in the studio and kind of like, you know, light it nice, and so we did that. And you know, it took about, you know, 20 rolls of film. I only had to take one, but, you know, he was right. You know, it's just me and Angela there. So, and it was, you know, it was.
What a prolonged the experience right there with Angela.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. So we got the shot. It took a couple hours, and I turned it in, and everyone was happy with it. You know, it was like, you know, that's it. That's the cover. You know, 2 months go by. They've already printed a couple hundred thousand copies, if not more. They already were shipped to Japan. And next thing you know, we get a call from the record company saying, you know, they're pulling the plug on it. They don't want that because the PMRC was happening, and they couldn't get in the stores, that, you know, the family stores, and they didn't want anything to
do
with the sale of the record, because, you know, the songs were amazing. Everyone was in, you know, in order, and they didn't want the artwork to, you know, jeopardize anything. So, you know, they put it on the side and they said, we got to come up with something. And then, I think Johnny called me up and said, Mark, you know, we got like a day to come up with something. And I said, you know, I'm ready, you know, I'm here, let me know. And then I get a call like literally the day before the deadline was, and he just came up by himself and he said, you got a black bag, you know, like a hefty bag, you know, garbage bag. I said, yeah. I just went in my kitchen, you know, in the studio, pulled it out. I said, yeah, what do you want me to do with it now? And he goes, you know, just hang it up and got a squirt bottle or something. I said, yeah. Squirted the thing on there, and he just wrote Slippery One Wet. And then I took a Polaroid and I said, you know, you want to, he was already out the door. I said, you want to see it? You know, I didn't even shoot film yet. And he's like, no, just send that to him. That's it. That's the cover. And that was it.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. I always kind of thought it reminded me of like a car hood or something that was rained on, and then somebody with their finger wrote "Slippery When Wet." Like, it was very cool. But
well, that was the idea was, like, you know, if you're in the car and, like, you're in a car with blacked out windows, and some kid, you know, usually writes on a slippery, you know, writes their initials or whatever. So that's kind of what it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be a garbage bag.
Yeah, I never even knew it was a garbage bag. So everybody, we're talking about it, in case you do not know, which everybody does know, the Bon Jovi "Slippery When Wet" album cover. Now, Mark, how many albums did that sell? Do you know how many times platinum did that album go?
I honestly don't know.
It had to go I bet it went 5 times, 10 times platinum, something like that.
Oh yeah,
gotta look it up.
Definitely 10 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, an amazing record, and what an insanely cool story about the cover.
Mark, some of my favorite stories from the book are the Ozzy stories, because there always seems to be some kind of weird twist or something happens. And can you talk a little bit about the time you got Ozzy to dress up in the tutu and the fairies wear boots theme? Can you tell that story? Because that's just one of my favorites from the book.
Well, that was actually my first photo shoot with Ozzy. It was 1981, and we're shooting him doing a couple things. So we were shooting a cover for the magazine. First album, solo album, came out.
Circus, was it?
Circus magazine, yeah. And then we're also doing something called heavy. It was called heist. We're doing like a yearbook theme for rock and rollers. You know, like, you know, yearbook. So Ozzy was like most athletic. That was the theme we were shooting him. Like, you know, lover boy was in there for most, you know, lover or something. Everyone had their own title in this yearbook. It was rock and roll. It was called Rock and Roll Yearbook. And Ozzy was most athletic because he used to jump around a lot. So I bought boxing gloves, and he came out with this pink tutu, like, for the concept. And then I saw the boots in the corner, the red boots that you put them on. And then we just started having fun. And really, that was only supposed to be a small black and white photo for this. It was called Rock and Roll Yearbook. And really, it was supposed to be a black and white, but I sent all the photos to the magazine and they used it for a cover.
That's great.
They were pissed for a while. That was supposed to be the cover, and I didn't know it was supposed
to be. Right. And when you say they, you mean Sharon and Ozzy. They weren't happy. So you send this thing in and thinking it's just going to be a small picture, and here is Ozzy on the cover of the magazine, unbeknownst to you or Sharon or Ozzy. And they, for a while, do you say something like they weren't returning your calls, or they kind of shunned you for a little bit?
Well, we were just getting, they really liked me, you know, and I liked them. I was only like, I was young. I was like 21, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like Ozzy Osbourne, you know? And then I put Ozzy on the cover in the pink tutu, the Prince of Darkness, you know? Like, it's like, it didn't go well. They didn't get back to me.
But then eventually they kind of come to accept it. And of course you get back in the fold with Ozzy and you maintain this long relationship with him, and you're doing photo shoots with him frequently. And another time, I guess maybe a year or so later, you get called to LA, I think by Sharon, and you show up at the house ready to do some photos. And you know, there's something going on with Ozzy's head that can you tell that story too, and then I'll leave the Ozzy stories behind. That's so great.
We started getting, you know, they started returning my calls when they started getting all this publicity from that shoot, you know, so it started working for them. And then we realized, you know, Ozzy was embracing all this craziness, and then I was the one that, you know, he was letting me do all this stuff. So I started trying to come up with other ideas. Since they were up for that and they were accepting that, I said, all right, let's come up with something else. So really, that cover was only supposed to be a cool shot of Ozzy coming out of a birthday cake, because it was Circus Magazine's 13th birthday. And I figured we'd play off the bats. So I got this this flag with the bats on it. It says happy 13th. And I got some black balloons just to have in the background. And we had this cake like he was coming out of, and he was going to wear a tuxedo. So that was the shot. So when I got there, I was all set up, you know, Sharon's like, oh, you're not going to believe what Ozzy did last night. I said, what? He goes, he shaved his head. And I had a lot riding on this, you know, I'm still kind of a, you know, I'm working for Circus for a couple of years now, but still, you know, they flew me out there. I had to get all these props. It was expensive.
Which in the '80s for a long haired rocker to shave his head, that's pretty crazy for those days.
Right. Now it's like everybody's doing it, but in the '80s you needed long hair.
Yeah. Right. But everyone, you know, Ozzy's crazy. Let's face it. So then I said, all right, what are we going to do? She goes, don't worry, Mark, we'll figure something out. I'm like, all right. So then she started, you know, she brought Ozzy out there and she started like, you know, drawing on his head, you know, like this thing that, you know, this black, you know, weird design. And I said, you know, we're missing something here, you know? And I took the two balloons and I put them on his head and it looked like Mickey Mouse ears, you know? It wasn't planned that way, you know? And then Ozzy gave me that grin and it just snapped it. And that was the shot. It was like magic shot.
That is great stuff.
And you know, you kind of hinted on this earlier, but what, you know, you got Ozzy to do things that he might not do with other photographers. And I don't think that is just an exclusive to Ozzy. That seems to be the case with just dozens and dozens of our favorite rockers. What do you think, self-reflection on yourself, what do you think you have that enables these people to feel comfortable with you? Because they don't with everybody. I mean, I even know from interviewing some of them, there's just some of them, you know, they're guarded. And how do you break through that and reach them emotionally?
That's just it. Like, I don't break through. I just be myself. And I'm really a shy person, you know, and then to be in a situation where I can have a little bit of control and be there for a reason, it kind of helps me get out of my shell. So I kind of like turn into this other kind of, you know, person that I kind of wanted to be, you know? So it kind of put me in a spot where they, you know, they listen to me, you know, if I tell Ozzy to move to the left, he moves to the left. I'm like, wow. You know, and I just felt, you know, I really felt good doing it. And I was just really conscious. I kind of know by them looking at me, I'm not a real technical guy, but I know when they're looking at me, I know if they turn to a certain side and I know their better side. I know how the light hits them. And I just put them in that light and I don't really talk a lot when I shoot. But once I have it down, then I start talking and I kid around a little bit. And I guess that's it. I just make them feel comfortable. I goof around.
And they trust you. I mean, they obviously trust you because they all want you back the next time, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, they, you know, like when I'm on the road with these bands for a week at a time, I used to like, when Rat went out for, you know, a tour, I would go for a week, then I would go out with Molly and Ozzy, I'd bounce around. And then, so when I went out there and I'd be there to take pictures and get them in the magazine, so I'd be like this new person, part of their entourage, their tour. So I was like the new friend all of a sudden every time, you know, they see me once every few months. So it was like really refreshing. And they always gave me good, you know, good access. And I give them photos and I'd always bring other photos. And yeah. And I was always in the front of the photo pit. So all the girls in the front, you know, they always like want, you know, they always want to meet the band. So when I'm there, they give me notes and the band says, hey, check, get that one over backstage. So I'd be a little between guy too. So
yeah, right. There you go.
That's great. And Mark, you were like another rocker hanging out with them. You brought the, you know, some of the girls back, which was amazing. And so I think that's one of the things I think they felt like you were one of them too, as opposed to just like some guy from a magazine, you know, who was coming to shoot them. They trusted you and they felt like you were a friend. And I think that was a cool thing. Now, Mark, I wanted to talk about, you've done, you know, a lot of work with Ace Frehley through the years. And one of the greatest pictures that you've taken was from Madison Square Garden in 1977 during what I think was the Rock and Roll Over Tour. And tell us about that whole experience, because you had to be a kid at that point, like a high school kid.
Yeah, I was 17 actually when I shot that, and I was I was shooting for about a year already, a couple years, like, you know, seriously. In my, you know, I was shooting all the shows around town, and I would sneak in the first night and take pictures, and then stay up all night, and then sell them the next night. So, and make sell them for a buck a piece. I'd sell them in my high school locker, out of my high school locker. I'd sell them on the train. And then I'd go in and shoot the concert and then shoot them. And then afterwards I would sell them again.
Were you developing your own photos at that point? Like, did you have a dark room and stuff where you went in? Yeah.
Yes. Actually, my dark room is going to be at the museum too. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I saw that. When you said my dark room, I was like, is this Mark's house or is this the museum?
And to any younger people that are listening, I was in the photography club for when I was back in school. In the old days, guys, you had to go into a dark room and dip the things into chemicals to get the prints of the photos, and very different from what we do nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna try to, you know, do a little keynote speaking at it. It's on a campus, you know, over in Brookdale. So I'm gonna try to get kids to come in and educate them a little bit about the process and all that, you know. But yeah, it was, you know, I used to, like, you know, stay up all night and develop. I loved it in the beginning, but after a while, it's like you have your hands in the stop and it's your hands are all like these chemicals. And it was just like, I was just cranking out these prints, you know. But it was fun. And actually, that show really changed my life, because that photo of Ace that's in my book, you know, I got arrested that night selling those pictures.
Man, I didn't know that. Wow.
And then the next day, I went to Circus Magazine. I just looked at I went home and I'm like, what am I going to do now? I went to jail overnight, went in the paddy wagon with all the shirt sellers, and I was a 17-year-old kid. And then I went home to the circus and I looked at where it was and it said New York City. So I just went on a train. I went to New York and I knocked on the door and they let me in. And the secretary took a liking to me and said, you know, hang out, you know, stay. And the art director will, you know, I'll have him come see you in a few hours if he's around. You know, he's working and he's busy now. I said, I'll wait till tomorrow, you know. And he came out. And he went and saw me and he liked my stuff. And then Jerry Rothberg came in, the editor, the owner of the magazine. And, you know, they took a liking to me and they said, oh, well, we like your work, but you have to shoot Kodachrome film, because they liked it nice and sharp and crisp and everything. I was shooting Ektachrome at the time because it's available light. And that's what the band's like. So I said, okay, I'll reach out when I think I have something. So then fast forward like 6 months, Aerosmith was playing at Giant Stadium with Ted Nugent. And I stuck my camera in and had some great shots. I had it on Kodachrome because it was during the day. With Kodachrome, you have to use a flash. And I didn't like using flash, but I didn't have to use a flash because it was an outdoor stadium show and they were playing in daylight. So I had all these really cool shots of, you know, Aerosmith. I dropped him off at the office. The secretary called me up and asked me, do you have any pictures of Aerosmith? Because they can't find any. And I said, yeah, I actually do. And I dropped him off. And then a month later, she goes, you know, go to the newsstand. Check, you know, I want you to see something. Beatles were on the cover. It was October 78. And in the magazine was the biggest picture in the book, the centerfold of Steven Tyler. And then from there, you know, I started getting in the magazine, every issue. I had Ted Nugent and Journey, and, you know, it was just, you know, then eventually they got me access with the photo pass. And then I think one of my first assignments was Van Halen 79 in Convention Hall in Asbury Park. And then there was another centerfold. And, you know, then I just started, once I had that access and I sent them from Circus, and it's like the doors open really wide, you know, it's great. So I could pretty much get a photo pass anywhere, get backstage. I mean, that's when the shot of Eddie Van Halen was backstage at the Convention Hall. You know, that was 1979. I was like 19, I think.
And you talk about, you know, you mentioned getting arrested for the that night, and then flash forward like 6-7 years later, maybe 8, I don't know. You mentioned in the book that you are actually taking pictures of Kiss for the first time, some of their first photos without makeup, right near where the arrest had happened. And here you have them in your own studio, right? In Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah, just a block away from where I got arrested. I'm shooting, you know, when Vinnie was in the band, and, you know, Yeah, it was kind of crazy.
What do you remember about that? Were they, I mean, these were literally some of the first pictures that they've ever done without their makeup, you know, where they're not hiding their face. Were they nervous? How did, was it awkward for them? How did they feel when they, for some of their first photos without makeup?
No, they were, I mean, Paul and Gene, just, they're very confident. So they, you couldn't even tell they weren't nervous at all. But, you know, Eric was a little shy in front of a camera, and Vinny was, he just kind of went along with it. But Gene and Paul were just, I think they thought they had their makeup on, to be honest with you, because they were, you know, they just.
Still posing like they would, right?
Yeah, they would, you know, they were. And, you know, they just moved on. It's like they didn't skip a beat. They decided what they were going to do, and they did it. And right. I was there, and then they started work. Then they started hiring me to do their tour books, and you know, still to this day, you know, I just did their last tour book when a few years ago.
Right on. And you know, another thing we see in the book is that, you know, you were just there at all these big events like the US Festival, Hearing Aid, and let's talk about those two events, which were really big moments in heavy metal history in the 80s. The Hearing Aid Project, can you talk about being there, what the vibe was like, what you remember about that day?
It was just like a bunch of kids getting together from like on a high school trip, you know, like everyone was just, you know, loving each other, you know, high-fiving and hanging out and smoking and drinking and playing together. It was, you know, quite an experience, you know, nothing like that's ever going to happen again. And, right. You know, it's so great that they have that on video too, because you can just watch it and just, it's amazing, you know?
And who invited you to that? Like, how'd you get it? Was it the Dio group or?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
Maybe Ronnie.
Yeah, I had a relation. First time I shot Ronnie was in Black Sabbath, of course, in the you know, the first album. And then I became friendly with him. And he was great. Like the first time I shot Black Sabbath was at the Garden, the Black and Blue tour. And I remember I never met Tony before. And I just did a shoot with Eric from Blue Oyster Cult with his motorcycle. And I said, you know, let me try to, maybe I can get a shoot with Black Sabbath. So I asked the tour manager, I introduced myself. I said, I work with Circus and, you know, can I get a band shot? So yeah, let's see what I can do. So I did this quick band shot with the band, and then Ronnie stayed behind and he said, you know, do you think you got it, Mark? You think you got the shot? You know, I said, yeah, I think I got it. I said, you need anything else? I said, well, if you want to do some individuals, that'd be cool. And he stood around and we did some individuals. And actually the full page in my book was at my first time I ever shot Ronnie. And then I shot him the next tour and they started working with him. And then when he went solo in 83, I shot him in my studio in New York for Faces magazine. And with
I love that.
The net in the background. And that's actually the photo that Wendy had blown up, and she put when he passed, you know, when everyone signs the book at the service.
Right. Right.
And I'll never forget. It was me. I was kind of coming, you know, towards the end. It just started. And me and Rob Halford, he was right behind me, came and we're walking, we're signing the book, and Rob's behind me. And he goes, oh, what a nice picture of Ronnie. I wonder when that was taken. And I looked up and I saw it was my photo of that photo.
Wow.
And it's the first time I saw it that I knew she was going to do it. So I was like, wow, that was cool. And then I also did the last photographs of him and Black Sabbath that they used for their box set. You know, when they played Radio City and they did the DVD.
The Heaven and Hell. Heaven and Hell. Yeah.
They wanted me for that too. So I pride myself in maintaining my relationships with bands. You know, they're friends, you know. I don't even look at it as work. I just look at it as just like, you know, I hope they call me. And then if they don't call me, I'll say, why didn't you call me? You know, like like a girlfriend, you know. It's like, what do you mean?
What are you using that person for?
That DVD is dear to John and I, our hearts, because we're actually in the bonus footage of the interview. Yeah, great stuff. But the Oz Festival, and again, I don't want to make this all about Ozzy, but I love the story that, you know, for anybody that knows the Oz Festival, one of the most historic heavy metal concerts ever, it was the Heavy Metal Day. This was the festival thrown by Steve, not Jobs, Steve Wozniak, I think. Ozzy plays during the day, and Ozzy arrives in this crazy costume. And I love that. Can you tell us what happened with that costume beforehand?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Sharon Ozzy didn't even know what I did with it before when it came to my studio. So I was doing a photo shoot at my studio with Ozzy. And Sharon said, you know, we're going to send this costume that we're going to use at the US Festival. We want to do a photo shoot with it. I'm like, all right, cool. You know, send it over. It was this big box, you know, it looked like it came from Africa. You know, it was like one of those things where, you know, it could be like, you know, the little voodoo dolls in there or something. Like, it was all wrapped up like that. So, you know, we're supposed to do this shoot. It was been sitting in my studio for a week, and she's like, you know, don't open it, just let it be, and we'll open it. I'm like, all right, I'm dying to see what's in there. So the day of the shoot, they said they couldn't make it. Something happened, they couldn't make it. And I said, but can you ship the box to, you know, where they were going to be for the US Festival. And I said, all right, you know, I was bummed out. And then I just, you know, opened it up, you know, I got my little crowbar, you know.
So this is like the wooden, where the, you have to open it with like a crowbar because it's a wooden box.
I have a picture of me in front of it, you know, kind of, I did a little self-portrait, and then I did a whole process of me taking it out and then putting it on. And then I remember doing one shot with my thing hanging out of it, because it's all feathers and stuff. And in the chapter, I had to Photoshop it out, but it's actually sticking out of it. and I never, like, the first time that they're going to see it is in the book, you know? Like,
right.
That's great.
They didn't even know I did that, you know? Like, yeah. I packed it up real nice and everything. And then, you know, Ozzy, of course, he wore it and the first song, and he ripped it off in like 30 seconds.
And of course, we're talking about The Decade That Rocked, book by Mark Weiss. It's a great visual, amazing visuals. And like I said, there's also just great little stories in there about all our favorite bands, and just really highly recommended. Again, I got it for Father's Day. Where's the best place to get it, Mark? Is it Amazon or through your site?
Well, right now it's sold out of Amazon. It's been sold out for like over a month. First pressing. So the second pressing, I have a handful left of I'm sold out of the first pressing, but the second pressing I should be getting in on Friday. I'm getting like 600 books in. And good. In time for my signing at the event.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, it's been great. I've been getting a lot of good press. I actually, out of nowhere, I go on my Facebook and I really check out my direct messages, you know, on there. And then, once a week I'll read it, and it was a message from the Today Show. I didn't put two and two together really until they emailed. So I got the message, and I say yes to anyone to do an interview. You know, like this 14-year-old girl last week, she's just started her own thing and wanted to interview me. So I want to inspire anyone that has, especially young people that want to share, you know, spread the word, because she's 14 now and passionate about rock and roll. Can you imagine another couple of years, you know?
Yeah. So, and we need the young people.
Yeah, no doubt. That's amazing. For sure. That's great.
So I just say yes without even like checking out how many followers they have or anything. I mean, after I agree to it, before I go on, I'll see how many followers they have just to see, you know, get a little bit for them when it's actually committed. So this person from the Today Show, which I didn't really get until they responded in their email, and it had the logo of the Today Show, and it was from Australia, and they wanted to do a piece on me. And we did a live piece about a week ago from Sydney. It was 9 o'clock in the evening here in New Jersey. And it was, I guess, 9 in the morning there. And it was fun, you know. I like to do more of that. And I just started.
Mark, that was part of the clip that you sent, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was great. And they had, you know, everybody from like Sebastian Bach was in that. And, you know, everybody who you're friends with, who you've shot through the years,
it's just an unbelievable roster of people that you've worked with. I mean, I can't even name anyone that I don't think you've worked with. You know what I mean? Like, it's just been great. And Mark, let me ask you one thing. You've just to off topic a little bit. You interviewed me and Jamie from Like It for another project you're working on, the rock scene.
Right. Well, I acquired the name Rock Scene, the magazine from the 70s. I always loved the logo.
Yeah.
And so I decided to archive all the magazines from the 70s. There's 52 issues from 73 to 82, I think. And amazing. I archived them. I threw them up there. Anyone wants to, you know, check them out or read them. And then I just kind of used the concept of Rock Scene to, you know, interview new bands on their, talking about their rock scene. And then, whenever I did a show, because there's no magazines out there, it was a way I could showcase my photographs and put them in a way and say a little bit, not much, I'm not a journalist, but, you know, say a few things in there and just put it up. Anyone wants to grab the photos and do what they want with it. And then I just kind of led from that. But I did start doing interviews, and actually Ronnie James Dio was my first interview over 10 years ago when he,
wow,
you know, on the last tour before.
Yeah, I know I've been with you. You've done Ace. I think that was on the Gibson tour bus in Philadelphia. Yeah. That was a great interview. What a great setting that was. And thank you that you featured my group Like It in the magazine. And we did that at Starland Ballroom. So I really appreciate your help with me and my group. And thank you for doing that.
Yeah, well, I have over 100 interviews and there's a few million views. And I just, you know, it's like I'm at a show and I like to go early and watch soundcheck. But what am I going to do between soundcheck and the show? So I figured, you know, why don't I just sit and chat with them and videotape them while I'm chatting with them? It's just me and them. And it's pretty much the storyline is just tell me your early beginnings. Like, tell me when you first started and up until you became, you know, famous or, you know, you took off. So it's kind of like the story behind the story, you know, and it's just like a campfire story, you know, 10, 15 minutes. And I have a lot of people on there and they're, you know, it's, they're fun to watch. So I, you know, and I'm starting to post them on the Decade That Rocked. So I'm kind of any bands that are in that category,
in that decade, right.
I'll throw them on there for some new life, you know, cause I've been doing it for 10 years. But I have a ton of people. So I would, you know, check out the interviews on the Decade That Rocked.com and also on rockscene.com too.
Absolutely.
So Mark, you we'll let you go soon because you've been very gracious with your time tonight. I know we're already at 45 minutes, but I did want to ask you, because obviously you shot in the 70s, you shot in the 80s. The book is about, for the most part, the 80s. But, you know, you've been shooting the 90s, the 2000s, and so on and so on. Could there be a book for each decade? I mean, is that something you've thought about? I mean, the 80s were incredibly important to me, but the 90s were possibly equally as important, you know, and yeah. I would love to see some of those photos from the 90s all condensed into one book too.
Well, it's funny when Sebastian did I sent Sebastian the book and I wrote a note in there and I had 8x10s and I gave it to him and the first thing he said when he opened it up, because he did like a little, pretty much an infomercial for me. And he goes, "What decade was it, Mark?" You know, because, you know, what decade is the decade that rocked? And I have a shirt. This is the decade that rocked. And people come up to me, goes, "What decade is that?" So
right.
I'm going to do a little tagline on the back of the shirt. What decade was that? Because, you know, the 60s rocked, the 70s rocked, the 80s, you know, every decade
right.
rocked. But for me, it was the 80s, you know?
Right.
The 90s for me, actually, Mark, I kind of stuck with the 80s bands, you know? Like,
right.
I mean, I shot Alice in Chains and I shot Soundgarden and, you know, Limp Bizkit and all those bands too. But, you know, they really didn't want to be photographed or they didn't care.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, I tried. I mean, I had assignments to shoot them and I would get backstage and all that. But they weren't fun, you know?
Right. So, it was just a different experience.
Wow. Yeah, so I kind of let it get, you know, I stuck with the bands that ended up, you know, playing clubs. Like the bands that were playing arenas that were my friends, I didn't go anywhere. Wherever they went, I would go too, because it really wasn't about anything else. It was about just hanging out with my friends, you know? And if I could take a picture all right, so I couldn't make them, I couldn't sell them to all the magazines, but still, I mean, it's still getting this stockpile of photographs. I'm a photographer, you know, I'm not, I really didn't do it, not doing it for the money. I just do it to document and to document those bands and to do it throughout the decades. It's amazing. But yeah, my next book, I want it to be, well, actually I want my next book to be a one shot of one of the bands out there. Mm-hmm. Like Ozzy, Motley, Van Halen, Guns N' Roses, one of those bands and do like that decade of that band, like in the same kind of feel of what I did. But I want to work with that band. So I have to, reach out to them. I mean, I don't have to, but I want to, and get their cooperation and get involved with them and make it really special for the fans.
Right. Right.
But, also I want to do with Decade That Rock 2, kind of like call it BW, black and white, and do all this, pull up my black and white files of them, because the black and whites, I used to shoot more black and white than color because it was less money, because black and white was a lot cheaper and I would develop it myself. And the magazines didn't really want black and white, and I didn't really want to sell pictures to the magazines because they only pay $25 as opposed to $100. So I have all these black and white images, like
never before seen stuff.
Yeah, backstage on the bus because you didn't need it was all grainy and gritty and you just fuck around. And I have all these images, so I want that to be, and then focus more on being on the road with the bands. This book was more about like shoots that kind of like made me as a photographer, like, shoots that really had an impact on me, and like the Twisted Sister album cover or this.
Which I love.
So there's stories that were the big stories. So this next book won't be stories. It will just be a bunch of cool photos with maybe quotes from bands or something like that,
Right on.
Yeah, I don't know, but,
Mark, so. You got so much material, you can come out with a lot more books, and I'm looking forward to both Decade That Rock 2 with the black and white stuff, and I love the idea of sticking with one group and bringing the group in, working together with them on the book and doing a Motley book or a Guns N' Roses book, or an Ozzy book.
Yeah, I'm actually, I'm working on this project. It just came my way as kind of like a fluke. It was brought to me. Someone wanted to purchase a photo of Kevin Dubrow for the cover of a book that this girl was putting out. And she was the president of the Quiet Riot fan club from the 70s and the 80s, for the whole club, Randy and everything. And she reached out to me. She's like, how much would it cost to use this photo? Because she wanted the special photo of this necklace that she gave him with a microphone.
Wow.
It was too much for her. And I said, well, let me see what show me the manuscript. Let me see it. And she sent it to me. And there are handwritten notes going back and forth to Kevin. And she was a personal, not boyfriend, girlfriend, nothing sexual.
Right, but they really had a personal relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. She was just a true fan. She was only 16, I believe, when she met him. So I started looking at it, and then I started talking to my friend, Ron Sobel, who did, the Quiet Riot photos in the beginning with Randy, who's a friend of mine. And I figured let's turn this into maybe not a coffee table book, but let's turn it into something glossy, not just a book with, memoirs, like a lot of the books that there are little and, you just read it, and then have her personal, fan club photos. Cause she has great photos of her getting ready, ticket stubs, posters. She even has the original Quiet Riot mask,
wow,
video shoot that she helped get, actually, all these stories. So we're trying to get it out pretty, we're trying to at least do a pre-order by Kevin's, because it's the book's mostly about Kevin, but it's Quiet Riot, but it's really their relationship with Kevin. Kevin's going to be on the cover. And we're trying to get it out. Kevin would have been 65 on October 31st on Halloween. So I'm trying to tie it all in with the mask and everything.
Right.
So, definitely stay tuned for that. I mean,
it's a great project. I'm really interested in that as well, for sure.
Cool. Yeah. Well, Mark, before we let you go, where is the best place that people can get in touch with you online? Is it Instagram or Twitter, or what do you prefer?
I have all of them, but definitely Facebook.
Facebook,
M. Weiss Guy or Mark Weiss Photography. And then I have the Decade That Rocked.com, the Decade That Rocked on Facebook too. And I do have a new site. So since the pandemic, you didn't ask me what I've been shooting lately.
No, I didn't. But tell us, what have you been doing?
Okay. Of course you can't shoot rock stars, you know,
right.
But I shoot rock stars.
Okay.
All right. So
you're shooting, okay. What?
The sky
constellations or?
All right. So.
Okay.
I went to check out the sunset in Atlantic Islands, where I live near by the beach. And then I saw this little sign said, you know, this Henry Hudson Trail. And I said, oh, my daughter told me about that. And so I started walking along it. And all of a sudden I started seeing these rock formations, you know, like they stack rocks up and things. So I started taking pictures with my phone and making them look really huge and like looking like, you know, huge. And with the sunset, so I started doing that, and I started posting them, and made a site called I Want to Rock Stonehenge, because I used a photo that I shot when I was with Ozzy in 86 when they did Monsters of Rock, and I had a picture of Stonehenge, so I took that against a sunset that I shot, and I used that as the main shot, and then got inspired by it. And there's these, if you go on it, you know, I Want to Rock Stonehenge, you'll see these rocks that are really only this big, you know, but they look like they're, you know,
like 100 feet high. Wow.
And it's great. So when I walk, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, I walk down this path and I ride my bike now, and I just stop and I just kind of go for it and go for different things. And I found this little Barbie doll with her head, like gnarled off by some dog. And I found it. And I use her in there now too. And she's actually a rock climber. She's got like a helmet. So I throw her in there and do silhouettes. So you got to check it out.
I absolutely will check it out.
I'm looking at it right now on Facebook. Yeah, the little Barbie. Yeah, that's great. So it's I Want to Rock Stonehenge. It's a Facebook page, right?
Yeah, and no one really knows about it. This is the first time I'm announcing that I'm doing all this kind of stuff. But
I love it.
I never shared it with anyone. I just kind of word of mouth for now. But I guess the cat's out of the bag. I'm shooting rock stars. So at night, I do night shots too for the silhouette. So their stars are out. So I'm shooting rock stars still.
Awesome. You're still doing it. That sounds like a really fun project. I can't wait to see how you make these small things look huge. I know they're going to look amazing. And Mark, it sounds like you pulled it up right already on your Facebook.
Yeah, I'm checking it out right now. But Mark, it's been great talking with you. Thanks for this great book, The Decade That Rocked, guys. Highly recommended.
And I love the size of the book, Mark. I love it when Mark held it up and I saw the physical size of it. I love it. It's not that small book like it, you know, like your typical biography or something.
It's
like
a coffee table book. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. That's where we have it, on our coffee table. Yep.
When I got it, you know, and everyone's, you know, talking about it's a coffee table book, I'm like, I don't even have a coffee table. So I went and Googled it on Amazon. Yeah. The first thing I put heavy metal coffee table, and the first thing that came up was this really cool looking coffee table. And I bought it, and now I have it in my room.
That's great. Cool. And do you have the book on it?
Yeah, of course. I have a whole
book. I love it.
So if you buy the book from me on The Decade That Rocked, I can personalize it and all that. I also have these centerfolds that I do. I have a Lita one.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
And I have a Vince Neil one. I keep adding.
Oh, cool.
Just added a James Hetfield one.
Very cool.
I include that, you know, you can get it when Amazon, it becomes available, which it will be in the next week or so. You can get it for like $45, and you can get it for me for about the same, and you get postcards, and for a little more, I personalize it, write a little something. And then there's these different bundles with photos and all that. And there's t-shirts and, you know,
I have to thank you because you gave me an amazing postcard set that had Ace, D. Snyder, and some amazing stuff back in, you know, a few years ago. And I still have that. That's such a cool postcard set that you gave me.
Yeah. So you'll get those when you get the book from me. So you won't get it on Amazon, but you'll get it from me.
Nice. And Mark, at the event, people can buy the book too, and you're going to sign them?
Yeah.
Or at the opening now, will you be there only at the first day, or will you be there different days as well?
Actually, no. What I'm planning to do, because this thing is almost like sold out, and it's free. This one is free, but it might even be sold out. But if you still want to go, I would say go on, and I think they have a waiting list. And anyone on the waiting list, as soon as we do another one, because what I'm going to do is like once a week, I'm going to do a signing there. I'm going to go there for a couple hours. It's only 15 minutes from my house. It's the museum. You just have to make a small donation, and we'll give you one of these posters. If you make it like a $10 donation, you get a poster, and it's a donation for the museum, because it's a nonprofit. And then you get to check out all my photos, and then you take a picture with the slippery, you know, mannequin and me.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. It looks amazing. I cannot wait to see it. It's great. It looks unbelievable.
Cool. All right. Mark Weiss, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for spending some time with us. And
Thanks,
keep doing what you do. My wife and I always love running into you at shows. It's always, you're always so nice to everyone. And we appreciate what you do as fans.
I'm just a fan too, and I appreciate what you guys do.
A big thanks to Mark Weiss for joining us here on the podcast. And wow, so many great stories. I had even more notes I wanted to talk to him about, but I don't know. Somebody gives you 45 minutes of their time. That's enough. You know, you got to respect their time. So there you go. We'll put a video for this up on YouTube. You can watch us interview Mark if you'd prefer that. Well, you already just listened to the interview, so I guess I should have said that before we started the interview. Let's say if you want to actually go back and watch it, it is up on YouTube. Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Follow me on Twitter. It's @talkingmetal.com. We'll talk to you next time.